Hey, it's Mike McEntee. Here it comes. Yeah, the snow is pretty ugly out there, as you heard Matt talking about it. It is slowdown time. It is just pretend you're going to get home late. No, but not pretend. Know that you're going to get home late. Just take your time today. We are facing the polar plunge following the snow. I was out on the roads here just about a half hour ago. It's pretty darn slick. Traffic is moving slow. So ugly. It is a what we call fugly drive home today. So we're going to be talking about the environment, not so much that it's snowing, but we've got several environmental stories here today. We're going to talk about how the Trump administration, get this, is selling the rights to your public lands on the internet. And they may be selling them to companies who are using third parties to keep things secret while they're breaking the law. Yeah, that's it's nothing to laugh about, but this is what's going on. And apparently it's not just been the Trump administration that's been part of this. Some of this has been going on for quite some time. So we're going to be talking with the Center for American Progress about that a little bit later on the program. And we're going to be digging into a bunch of other environmental issues, including what happened with PolyMet. You may have heard that the other week. That was a surprise to a lot of people here in Minnesota that suddenly the whole PolyMet permit thing may be open for, you know, may be happening. It may absolutely be happening. So we'll be talking with Steve Morris from the Minnesota Environmental Partnership on that. But breaking news here out of Washington, and it's from a story here from the Washington Post, which contains some words I can't say on the radio, so you'll just have to follow along. But you've been following here how President Trump has been working with, you know, or trying to work, or depending on how much he works, I guess that's a question, but he has been focused, let's say that, maybe even that's the wrong word, on immigration. And he's been, today we had six senators, they're calling the group of six, it was three Democrats, three Republicans, come up with what they think is going to be a compromise agreement addressing DACA, which is, you know, protecting the children of people who were brought here, didn't have any choice in the matter, and protecting them from being shipped away. And, immigration law and all sorts of things, Trump wanting his border wall. I mean, this has all been going on, but they have allegedly come up with a compromise that nobody has seen yet. Nobody's been able to read yet. And we do not know if it has the support of the Republican Party. But Trump's reaction to this from the White House today. And again, this is not witnessed directly. This is a secondhand account here printed in the Washington Post. So you have to take that with a grain of salt. But it says here, and I'm reading, President Trump grew frustrated with lawmakers in the Oval Office when they floated restoring protections for immigrants from Haiti, El Salvador, and African countries as part of a bipartisan immigration deal. And this is according to two people briefed on the meeting. Now, here's the part that I can't read all of. He said, this is a quote from Trump. Why are we having all these people from blank hole countries come into here? Why are we having all these people from blank hole countries come here? Is the, I guess, the correct quote. This is according to people. He was referring to African countries and Haiti. He then suggested that the United States should instead bring more people from countries like Norway, whose prime minister he met yesterday. Remember, Trump really likes whatever he heard the last time he talked to somebody, you know, or the last person he heard from. The comments obviously left lawmakers taken aback. This is according, again, to people familiar with the reaction. Senator Lindsey Graham, he's the Republican from South Carolina, and Richard Durbin, the Democrat from Illinois, proposed cutting the visa lottery program by 50%, then prioritizing countries already in the system. This is according to a White House official. Now, a White House spokesman declined to offer an immediate comment on Trump's remarks. The White House has been spending a lot of time trying to put out fires by whatever Trump has or has not said. we have some more stories about that here a little bit later in the program. But outlining a potential bipartisan deal, the lawmakers discussed restoring protections for countries that had been removed from the temporary protected status program while adding $1.5 billion for a border wall and making changes to the visa lottery system. The administration announced early in the week it was removing the protection for El Salvador. And remember that a lot of people from El Salvador have been in this country for some time. But Trump seemed amenable to a deal earlier in the day during phone calls, aides said, but shifted his position in the meeting and did not seem interested. That's been a pattern. Donald Trump says something, he changes his mind, he does something else. He says, hey, I'm going to save all these jobs. The jobs don't come through. And he doesn't seem to care. He says, oh, that's just that's just the way he is. And you shouldn't be able to predict what I'm able to do because, you know, that's part of my power. Yeah, okay. But the problem is a lot of us are looking for leadership, and leadership is not something that just goes, hey, I'm going this way and I'm zigging this way and I'm promising you one thing and then I'm doing another. That was evident earlier in the day. And this had to do with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, when Donald Trump apparently made, and I say apparently because I'm going to at least give the administration the fig leaf that they offered today about some of the tweets he made, apparently contradictory statements about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Earlier today, this is White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders issued a statement opposing an amendment that would have increased limits on surveillance allowed by under law. But she was quickly contradicted by the president, who tweeted following a Fox News segment saying that the act may have been used with the help of discredited and phony dossier to badly surveil and abuse the Trump campaign by the previous administration and others, question mark. During the daily briefing today, Sanders insisted that the president was familiar with the House bill, including Section 702, which allows some warrantless surveillance of foreigners overseas.
We don't think that there was a conflict at all. The president fully supports the 702 and was happy to see that it passed the House today. But he does have some overall concern with the FISA program more generally. The president doesn't feel that we should have to choose between protecting American citizens and protecting their civil liberties. He wants to do both, and that's exactly what he's going to do. We don't see any contradiction or confusion in that.
Okay, so does he actually understand what this whole law is about?
Thanks, Sarah. Back to FISA, if I can. Many people are interpreting that first tweet from the president to mean he didn't actually know how FISA works, and for that matter, that he wasn't familiar with his own administration's policy.
That's all right.
Does he know FISA? Was he familiar with the policy?
He does, which is why he issued a presidential memo last week expressing concerns and asking for a review of it, which is also why DNI put out a new policy this morning. This is top of mind for the president, top of mind for the administration, and he has a full understanding. Don't believe me? Ask Speaker Ryan. Look to the comments that he made. He's somebody who's been in constant contact and many discussions with the president on this issue, and he stated that in his press conference earlier today.
And how exactly was the Trump campaign so badly surveilled and abused under FISA as he seemed to claim in that tweet?
Look, I think that there are a lot of things that indicate the surveillance that took place there, and I'm not sure what the part of confusion is on that front. You guys have reported on it many, many times.
I'm not sure what the confusion is. Well, the confusion is he said, I'm against this in one tweet, and then he came back and said, I'm for it in the next. I think that can lead to confusion, don't you? And again, that was after he watched a Fox and Friends episode this morning. And that seems to be a pattern.
There seems to be a pattern, and correct me if I'm wrong, if there is no pattern, where the president watches something on Fox and Friends and then he tweets about it. Apparently this morning, one of their personalities, Andrew Napolitano, said that this is not a good deal, Mr. President, don't do this. And then he went on Twitter and tweeted about the FISA program. There have been folks out there who have said, you know, there's a cause and effect. He watches something on Fox and Friends And then he tweets about it. Is that what happened this morning, and does that go on?
I'm sure you're disappointed he's not watching CNN.
I think he watched a lot of CNN, if you don't mind me.
I don't think that's true. Your numbers would be higher. In response to the question, as I just said, the president has a great deal of understanding. This is top of mind. He was talking about it last week. He issued a presidential memo on it. So it's not something that just happened this morning. This has been an ongoing discussion and something of great importance. The president doesn't believe that Americans' rights or liberties should be abused, but he certainly believes that Americans should be protected. And he wants to make sure we do both of those things. And that's why he supports the 702, but has concerns with FISA more generally. Matthew?
Thanks, Sarah. Sticking on the FISA topic.
Well, at least we're consistent.
Yeah, if you didn't see confusion and contradiction between that first tweet and the White House past stated policy, then why 2 hours later issue that second tweet that seemed to clarify the position?
We weren't confused, but some of you guys were. We wanted to make sure you knew the White House position.
People on the Hill or people in these offices?
I had several questions from people in the room. As I'm sure all of you know, because most of you were the ones sending them, President's been clear about what his position is. We've issued several statements on this, put out one last night that had to do with this. Look, I can't be more clear. I'm speaking on behalf of the president, on behalf of the administration, on what our position is, and I think I've laid that out several times here today.
Yeah, she's laid it out several times, but again, every time that Trump says something on Twitter, he seems to change his mind. And that's what has people worried. It has people worried that he doesn't understand what's going on, that he's not fit for office. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but the new cover of Time magazine, the next issue here, is out. And it features a picture of, well, it's a graphic of Donald Trump. And it says year one next to it. And it shows fire, basically his hair on fire, basically kind of a metaphor for the Fire and Fury book that just came out. A lot of things. I know there are a lot of issues we should be paying attention to, but we are also worried about what is going on with the leadership in the White House. We are concerned that the man who is in charge is maybe not all there, is not completely able to comprehend everything, because we keep seeing things again and again that point to this. And that's really concerning. Coming up on the Mike McEntee Show here, we've got a couple other things here after the break. We are going to be getting into the environment. We're going to be talking about what the Trump administration is doing, as I mentioned, to sell the rights to your public lands on the internet. They may be selling them to companies who are using third parties to keep things secret while they're breaking the law. We'll talk about that next year on the Mike McEntee Show.
While shopping for a fireplace insert at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, I was amazed at all the choices. Not just gas, electric, or wood-burning, but also built-in or freestanding, and options in every style from antique to modern. The staff really listened to us, explained the options, and helped us choose a fireplace we absolutely love. Now it warms our hearts and our home every winter. Thank you, Woodland Stoves, for a great addition.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak, putting in a word for the EPA Burn Wise campaign. It has important information about clean burning fireplaces. This is an important part of our mission at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. We know that the fireplace has to work. Work with your life, work with your living space, and also be environmentally smart. Come see us. Learn to burn wise. We have over 35 working units on display at the corner of Riverside and East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. Visit our store in person or online at woodlandstoves.com.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Mishad Cooley Erickson, a mechanical and electrical consulting engineering firm in Minneapolis, supports inclusivity by designing spaces for all user groups, honoring inclusivity and respect. These spaces include gender-neutral family restrooms and nursing mothers' rooms. For example, Mishad Cooley Erickson has designed lactation rooms for traveling mothers at the MSP International Airport. Designing these spaces has changed the expectations of similar facilities in airports around the country. Mishad Cooley Erickson designed safe and comfortable environments for occupants who are their number one priority.
This is Bill McLeslie, owner of IP House in Minneapolis. I started IP House with the mission of making technology simple again. Over the last 10 years, my team has helped hundreds of businesses with their technology. We provide on-site support and technical strategy for businesses just like yours. If your technology has you feeling on edge, call us. We take the mystery out of technology and make things simple again. IP House, supporting businesses just like yours every day. 612-337-6337.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. You've probably heard the Trump administration has taken the unprecedented and potentially illegal step of reducing the size of several monuments. That's land preserved for all of us. Protections have been removed for 2 million acres at Utah's Bears Ears National Monument and Grand Staircase National Monument. But what you may have not heard is the Trump administration is about to auction off the rights to drill on these previously protected lands. Even more troubling is the process is shrouded in secrecy that allows oil companies to circumvent laws designed to prevent them from stealing from you. Joining me to tell us the inside story on this is Deputy Director for Public Lands at the Center for American Progress, Nicole Gentile. Nicole, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Good to have you here. So let's first talk a little bit about how the current system works, because I think most people don't know this, and I think that's really part of what your article is about. What are the rules for how much land a company can lease for oil and gas? Because that's kind of basically what this comes down to, and why are all those rules important?
Yes, absolutely, and that is what it comes down to. So when Congress drafted the Mineral Leasing Act back in 1920, many, many years ago, they recognized the problem of allowing individual companies to monopolize drilling rights on public land. So as you said, lands that's owned by all of us. So the law prohibits any one single company from holding oil and gas leases on more than 246,080 acres, kind of bizarre number, in any one state. So this not only helps to curb speculation, but it also preserves what economists call the option value of oil and gas resources. So the right to lease oil and gas resources on public lands when prices might be higher. And that would get a better return for taxpayers like you and me on our public land.
Hmm. So it's meant basically to, it's not so much about the environment, it's meant to make sure that the government, which is all of us, is getting a good deal here when this land is auctioned off, and the land isn't auctioned off, it's the rights to drill on the land or have access to the mineral rights that we're talking about, correct?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And the Congress tried to prevent any one interest from monopolizing those rights and ripping off taxpayers, essentially.
Okay. So that's what happened back in the 20s. I think we had something called the Teapot Dome scandal where mm-hmm. somebody was trying to do you remember the details on that, the Teapot Dome?
Yeah. So basically what happened is Warren G. Harding's Interior Secretary was accepting bribes from oil and gas companies in exchange for granting oil leases. So he ended up in jail, which makes a lot of sense, but that was, you know, a big scandal back in the 1920s that really led to trying to have a little more transparency and openness in the oil and gas leasing system. But as we see today, that really hasn't held up, and we are, you know, this system is really broken and subject to a lot of abuses.
Yeah, so we know that in the past and currently, the oil companies really do want to be first at the trough here to get into these places to do the drilling, to get the minerals, to pull out these all the treasures that our country has, and mm-hmm. Make money off of them. So I want to bring this back to what we started talking about here. We had Bears Ears in Utah, which was this very. It got a lot of attention when President Obama decided that it was going to be a monument, basically setting it aside for everybody. And, a lot of that had to do not just with the wonderful, wonderful park that the Bears Ears is, but also all the Indian artifacts and everything went around this whole thing. There's all sorts of reasons that it was done. So this land was going to be a federal monument, essentially a federal park to all of us to enjoy. How can that be turned over to the highest bidder? That's what I want to know.
That's a great question. And that's exactly what we wanted to look into, right? So, you know, when these 2 million acres of national monuments, Bears Ears and Grand Staircase, Escalante, when the Trump administration signed those proclamations and tried to eliminate those places and turned over these beautiful Red Rock Canyons, this hunting and fishing areas, tens of thousands of Native American archaeological sites, essentially what he's doing is shutting down these big areas of national monuments to make them available to be sold off to private and industry interests. And that's what happens, is that oil and gas companies can nominate pretty much any parcel that's in the federal estate for oil and gas leasing. So we then wanted to look at what's next, what happens. And what comes next is that these public lands, if they are nominated by an oil and gas company, could be auctioned off in what are private and internet-based lease sales by a company that's actually owned by, you know, previous Enron employees, Chevron employees, and other big oil and gas industry players. So there really is no arm's length. It's a bit of the fox watching the hen house, if you will.
So this essentially, what you're describing here, and what I read about in the article, is that this is happening pretty much in secrecy. There is no real way for the public to watch and see what's happening unless they happen to get in on the bidding process, and then they only know about one particular parcel. There's no way to tell if a company is, you know, what they're bidding, what they're doing, and and this is the part that it just blew my mind, is that there are actual ways that they go out and get third parties so they can circumvent all these rules and regulations and be able to bid and get more land and more leases than they're supposed to have. Tell us about that.
That is something we are very concerned with. And I think that Trump's attack on Bears Ears, on Grand Staircase, has really shown a light and a spotlight on what is a broken system. So as you just said, pretty much an oil and gas company can go through the entire leasing process and remain anonymous. So first, they can nominate a parcel, as I mentioned, and they can do that anonymously. Then they can bid on the parcel, and all they have is a bidder number. So even if I were to go online and watch the lease sale happen, if I signed up through EnergyNet for an account, I still wouldn't know who's bidding on it. All I'd see is a bidder number, and I wouldn't get a sense of who that company was until lease sale results were posted later on. And even then, that company could either be hiring what's called a landman company, so a middleman company that comes in and buys the rights up and holds on to it for that that company that they're working for, and they are not required to disclose who they're working for. And then the other thing they could do is use these shell companies, so affiliates, subsidiaries that just have a different name. And by doing that, they're basically throwing BLM off the trail if they're getting more acres of public lands than they're legally allowed to have in any one state.
And does any of this lead to, it's a word we've been tossing around when we refer to Trump and Russia, but collusion between the companies so that they agree, oh, we're not going to bid so much on that particular thing, and you get that, and we get this, and therefore both of us get a good deal, and we don't have to pay that much. Does any of that go on, or is there any way to tell?
That's something we're also very concerned about, because no, there is no real way to tell. BLM has not announced if it has any systems in place to prevent that type of collusion or any other market manipulation between multiple companies, because there's so much, such an ability to be anonymous through this whole system. And then nobody needs to be there in person at a lease sale. They can be communicating on the internet or, you know, on the phone with each other. We don't know. And so one of our biggest concerns is just that BLM launched this whole internet lease sale process without announcing how they're going to prevent this type of collusion, market manipulation, fraud, other abuses that we know, you know, these oil and gas companies don't have a great track record of looking out for the public interest. So how is the federal government making sure that they do have some oversight? And the answer is, we don't know.
And, you know, a lot of this has been made, you know, we've made a big noise about this because this is the Trump administration. The Trump administration is moving back against the monuments. That's a big thing with environmentalists. But everything that we're talking about here with how this happens, that isn't the Trump administration. That's how this has been going on for quite some time, isn't it?
Yes, this system has been broken for a very long time. And that's why we really think it's important that the Government Accountability Office, that the Department of Interior's Office of Inspector General should review the entire federal oil and gas leasing program, see what's legal, what's not, how vulnerable is it to fraud and abuse, and what systems need to be put in place to make sure that they're looking out for taxpayer dollars and all Americans' best interests.
Now, one thing that has been going on, though, or hasn't been, I guess is a better way of putting it, since the Trump administration came in, is the government chasing down companies that cheat us out of royalty payments. Your investigation indicates that has stopped, essentially.
Well, what our investigation does indicate is that they've stopped putting out any sort of press release when they do fine a company for cheating American taxpayers. That was a practice that was very regular over the course of history. Every time that there was a fine, there was a press release that was released. But essentially, since the Trump administration came into office, that stopped. So we don't know, what's causing that. But it seems that, if anything, we know the Trump administration is very interested in making friends with the oil and gas industry and giving them handouts and whatnot. So it seems like it's probably in their best interest. They don't want to celebrate when they do any sort of fining activities. So that's my best guess there. But what we know just is that the practice of releasing press releases completely stopped.
Okay. We're speaking with Deputy Director for Public Lands at the Center for American Progress, Nicole Gentile, and we're talking about what is happening with the Bears Ears and other, potentially other monuments, because this is not just the Bears Ears monument, but it could be other monuments that the Trump administration is going to shrink and allow oil and gas companies to come in and drill and, I don't want to say do environmental damage because you don't know for sure, but just about any time that you start doing these types of things, it doesn't leave the land clean when they go away. And that is obviously why environmental groups get involved and are very upset about this, not just from the standpoint here of the taxpayers getting screwed over and not getting the money they should on these things, but environmental groups get upset. But the only way that they can put pressure on the companies that are involved in this thing is to know who they are. And right now, with the process you're describing, there's no way for direct protest against them, is there?
There isn't. And then the other issue, not only do we not know who these companies are, there's no real venue for public input and for public protest anymore. It used to be that these lease sales would happen in person, and people who really cared and wanted to, take an opportunity to speak out about protecting these areas that are in their backyard, they'd have an opportunity to do that, by showing up at a local lease sale. And that has been completely eliminated by moving the oil and gas leasing system to the internet. And it's definitely something that the industry wanted to do. They didn't like these protests. They don't like looking bad. But it's also something that's pretty concerning in terms of the fact that this whole system is so opaque and lacks so much public oversight.
Well, final question for you, and there may not be an answer to this, but what can anybody do about this? I mean, the Trump administration's decided this is the way it's going to happen. This is the way it has been happening for so long. Is there any hope that something's going to change?
That's a great question. And so in terms of hope, whether something's going to change, legal experts have spoken out. They said that President Trump does not have the legal authority to eliminate or to otherwise undermine national monuments. And the reality is that this action and any future action attacking national monuments is going to be immediately challenged in court, and it's pretty likely that it will be overturned. That being said, people who care about our public lands, our national monuments, need to weigh in with their decision makers. And I can encourage people to go to monumentsforall.org. There's a take action page there, so people can sign up to send a note to their members of Congress to tell them that they care about national monuments and they care about making sure that these lands stay in public hands instead of being auctioned off to oil and gas industry, interests.
All right. Again, that URL is monumentsforall.org. And if you want to find out more about what Nicole Gentile writes about over at the Center for American Progress, you can look her writings up over at AmericanProgress.org. Nicole, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike. It was great to be on the program.
And we're going to continue with our environmental theme here in just a moment when the Mike McEntee Show reconvenes after the break. We're going to talk about PolyMet. You may have heard something happened with PolyMet, that mine that may be happening up in northern Minnesota. And we're going to be checking in with Steve Morse from the Minnesota Environmental Partnership about that all next year on the Mike McEntee Show on AM 950.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens is the first green cemetery in Minnesota. It's a beautiful, peaceful place where burials are celebrations of life with as little impact on the environment as possible. Tony Weber founded it because he wants to leave a green legacy for his grandchildren, something many of us might feel. Learn more, visit the website mngreengraves.com. Give them a call. The goal is so meaningful, so positive, it might be right for you. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens.
This is Pat with PJW Automotive. AM 950 listeners know I've been a big supporter of the station. I'm also a job creator. I've assembled a team of the highest quality technicians to ensure our reputation continues to grow. After all, a job creator is simply someone who responds to customer demand. That demand has remained strong at PJW because we deliver quality the first time around. See why it's worth the drive to PJW Automotive. One exit north of 694 on 35W and online at pjwauto.com.
Fact is, it's January in Minnesota, and we spend a lot more time indoors. And we're breathing a lot of dry indoor winter air. But don't worry, Standard Heating has the solution. If you install a new furnace this January, you'll not only stay warm and comfortable, you'll also get your choice of a free air purifier or humidifier. Oh, and Standard Heating also offers 0% interest and $0 down on approved credit. Suddenly, this winter doesn't look so bad. Find out more at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, the comfort you deserve.
Moe's Tax Service, family-owned and operated since 1971, providing a full spectrum of tax preparation and associated services. Think about it. Why would you take your most important financial information to a franchise operation with a cheap basic package that goes up dramatically once you're in the door? You can find out all you need to know about Moe's by visiting www.moestax.com. That's M-O-H-S-Tax.com. Or call them at 612-721-2026. Don't be a blockhead. Go to the professionals at Moe's Tax Service.
One Voice Mixed Chorus, Minnesota's LGBTA chorus, returns to the Ordway Concert Hall for Sanctuary, an unforgettable evening of choral music celebrating the music of immigrants who make Minnesota home, including Scandinavian, German, Irish, Mexican, Hmong, and Somali. One Voice will also perform You Will Be Found for Broadway's Dear Evan Hansen and I Come From Good People. That's at the Ordway Concert Hall Friday, January 19th and Sunday, January 21st. Call 651-224-4222 or check out onevoicemn.org for tickets today.
Why must the world be so cold? They've gone against what was told. Thinking rape is cool? Think about it. They think it's not wrong? Violence against women? The rape, the abuse, the emotional, physical? They all hold the hate. Think about it. Is it right or wrong? What attracts you? I'm not saying no names, but you laugh. Talk about it like nothing is wrong? Think about it. They all hold the hate? Gotta stop the violence. Stop the hate? Think about it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. The good news here is the snow is sliding off to Wisconsin and Iowa and other places that aren't Minnesota. So things are going to be getting better in terms of, you know, the snow messing up your commute. The bad news is the snow has already messed up your commute. And everything that you look at on the traffic map is a color that indicates that it's slow. So you're going to be getting home later than you thought if you're leaving right now tonight. So take it easy, drive carefully, and then get ready for just incredibly cold weather because that's what's coming next. All right, that's our weather environment. Let's talk about some other things about the environment, namely the PolyMet sulfide mining project in northern Minnesota. Suddenly, this last Friday, the DNR issued a permit to mine there. Joining us to talk about that is Steve Morse from the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, this whole Polymet announcement last week seemed to come out of left field. Was this a real surprise?
Well, the timing was a surprise. You know, it seems like we're regularly getting the media, getting the actions by the government, whether it be things like delisting monuments or undermining other policies or doing these new permits coming out on Fridays. So we knew it was going to happen sometime in the near future. So it wasn't a total surprise, but it is a big deal because basically it's the agency's draft proposal saying that this is how they propose they go ahead to permit this facility.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about it because, you know, Polymet pops up occasionally in the news and then we kind of forget about it. Let's talk about what exactly Polymet is and what the threat is to the environment.
Well, and so Polymet is our first, is the front of the line of a number of proposals to do a mining of sulfide-bearing ore. And in that ore, they would be mining things like copper, nickel, and other metals. The problem is we have this large, large deposit in northern Minnesota, but it's contained in a very low, low-grade ore. So it's very small density. More than 99% of the ore that is mined will be waste. And so they're basically taking these large, large pieces of land, extracting a small amount of minerals and metals, and then the rest becomes waste. And that waste, unlike the waste from our taconite mines that has we've done for many decades, when it mixes with air and water, it creates sulfuric acid, what's known as acid mine drainage. And nowhere in the country has there been one of these mines that has opened, operated, and closed without violating water standards from that mine. And so some of them have been horrifically large problems with billion-dollar projects. Many of them have never been cleaned up. And we just think it's the wrong... This is the wrong proposal in northern Minnesota, the water-rich area that we have there.
Okay, so this is a bad idea. Where are we with this idea? I mean, the permit's been, you know, issued here. Does that mean it's automatically going to happen, or what might happen?
No, there are many hurdles yet, and so you know what the company is doing, and it's a investors from Switzerland and other overseas investors are trying to get it permitted. This is a small company, although it is controlled by a foreign interest. But we expect that if they do get a permit, then they will have to they may well be sold or bought by somebody else who will have more resources to come in and actually develop the mine. So there are a number of hurdles, even if it does get permitted, before there's actually a mine that would be constructed. But this, at this point in the process, this is a draft permit, and so there's a comment period, and we really encourage people to participate in that comment period. There will be hearings, and we'll be publicizing those, but there'll be hearings in Duluth and up on the Iron Range in February, and we encourage people to attend the hearings, to submit comments, so there, it goes through this public hearing process, and then the DNR takes those comments, analyzes them, and then presumably they'll come out with a final draft permit that they would then issue. And, you know, then when that happens isn't entirely clear. There are opportunities for that to be challenged and contested case hearing and other processes. So it's certainly not a done deal, but it's it's an important milestone in what seems to be an inexorable march forward on this project.
The comments that the public makes. I mean, there's going to be the hearings, as you mentioned. We've got a pair of those coming up. We have this comment period that stretches into March, I think, is what you said.
Right.
How seriously do those comments get taken? I mean, is it just that they tally them up and say, oh, there was X number for and X number against, I guess we'll go for or against, or do they look at them? What happens to all this, or does it just get tossed in the trash?
No, I mean, they're really important, and I remember, I was a deputy commissioner at the DNR for a number of years, and that public input is really taken into account. And what's important is that we hear from, you know, different citizens with their personal perspectives, and it is all weighed, but it isn't just a numbers game. And so, you know, overwhelmingly on some of these early comment periods, I think we had 50,000 comments on some of the early comment periods on this mine proposal, and overwhelmingly against it. And the public, you know, we can demonstrate through our polling, is against the project, especially once they get a description of the project that it'll be hundreds of years of treatment of wastes in order to protect our water, if we're able to protect our water. But the contamination will last as far as people can see. So the public is against it, but there is tremendous political pressure and tremendous corporate pressure to move this project forward within the state. And, you know, we like to think of ourselves as being kind of a good government state, but the pressure that is being brought to bear on our agencies and on our government by those that want to mine our resources is unbelievable. And, you know, that's what's really propelling this case forward.
And I think when you say political pressure, I'm going to put the Republican Party in that, because I know you're a nonpartisan group. But from what I've been seeing here, let's see, I think it's Karen Housley who has announced that she's running for U.S. Senate. I think she made that one of the first things she said is, hey, this is a great thing. We need mining in northern Minnesota, and this will be a great way to bring it back. So it appears to be that it's a political campaign talking point, at least for her, if not the Republican Party right now.
I think that's true. But, you know, the support within the Democratic Party is certainly mixed. And as you know, in the northern part of the state, there are a lot of range Democrats who are really the elected leaders who want to see this go forward and who have a very large role to play politically in the state. And so it's this coalition of Republicans and, you know, business-oriented Democrats and range Democrats who are really propelling it forward. Overwhelmingly, Democrats, as we look at the polling, are against the project, the rank-and-file Democrats. But the Democratic Party has not really done its work to give this its a fair hearing. Every year in the legislature, you know, that combination of Republicans and range Democrats combine to further roll back the environmental standards we have in order to accommodate this project. And we've seen it time and time again. So, you know, it's a bipartisan issue all the way around. I'll say that.
Let's jump back to the cost on this, because I think that should inform people on where they fall on this whole thing. Because everybody goes, oh, hey, you know, we get some mining, we get some jobs. But a couple things we know about that. When we talk about jobs, we're not really talking about a lot of jobs. And those jobs are going to be maybe just run by robots, or it's going to be very few people. So it's not like people have this memory of what the Iron Range used to be. It used to be that a mining job was a ticket to a solid middle-class lifestyle, and you had it, and then your son had it, and then your grandson had it, and that's the way it worked. But that's not the way it works anymore, and it's not because of environmental regulations. It's because that is the way that the world has changed. But then there's the environmental side of this whole thing, which is the cost if indeed we do this. Let's say we do have jobs. We do have, but on the other side of the ledger here is we've got a long-term environmental cost that stretches for, give me some description here. How long this we have to deal with this and what that cost could be?
Well, I mean, literally, we are looking at hundreds of years of water treatment for this facility. And there are two, there are a few really big problems. Number one, they are building this tailings basin, which is many square miles large. This will be a lagoon that will be there in perpetuity. They're building it on top of an old tailings basin for a taconite mine. So it's old technology, and they're going to put this new acid waste into this open lagoon. And so there's a concern that isn't the current highest and best technology, which would be more of a dry storage. And this old dam may fail. It's going to be, I can't remember, it's 100, 150 feet high. And if it fails, that'll just be a catastrophic catastrophic failure. And people downstream, including the Fond du Lac community, are going to be very negatively impacted by that. And that stream goes all the way into the St. Louis River and into Lake Superior, where Duluth and Superior get their water. So there's a catastrophic, and even if there isn't a catastrophic, there's the steady leakage to the bottom of this old pit, and that will go on in perpetuity. There will also be treatment of the water that they can collect, and they will treat that and discharge it, but in order to meet water quality standards, that may well have to go on forever. They modeled it out 500 years, and that's as far as their models run. But they say, well, yeah, we could be treating this water still in 500 years. And so, yes, there are some jobs created in an area of the state that really needs more jobs and economic development. But we can't sell our soul for the 300 jobs. And they're important. Every job's important, especially when it's a good, solid job. But there aren't nearly as many as there used to be in the mining industry. And what also happens is they bring people in from other parts of the world. These are international companies, and they have these specialists who are trained in the operation of these mines that they bring in from around the world to operate the mine. And it's forecasted that it would run for 20 years and then maybe, clean up for 500 years or more. It's just, when you look at it at that level, you just have to scratch your head and say, and why would we do this? The estimated cleanup costs by the DNR, now not by us, but by the DNR, is $1 billion. And wow. The company is saying they will put that money up. They have not done that yet, but they will put that money up as a reserve fund. But the stakes are very high on this. They're very high.
The stakes are high on this and a lot of other environmental issues here, and the next governor of Minnesota is probably going to have a big say in that. And we got just a couple minutes left here, but I know you've got a forum coming up that we can hear from the gubernatorial candidates. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. So on the 24th, so that's not far away. That's just less than 2 weeks away now. There will be a conservation and environment forum. It's going to be held at Hamline University. We have the six leading Democratic candidates all confirmed. We're working relentlessly to have a Republican or more. We've contacted all the leading Republican candidates too, but do not have them confirmed. We have a couple of great moderators, and we're going to be asking questions about air, water, land, legacy, and other cross-cutting questions. So we're going to have an hour and a half, 2 hours of questions with these candidates. The room is already booked, believe it or not. The response to this has been overwhelming. So the room is already filled up, but we're working on overflow rooms, and we're seeing that the different groups are doing remote locations where you can live stream it, and then you can use a Pigeonhole application on your phone to actually enter questions, to rank, vote on questions. So we'll have some questions ahead of time. Others will take off the Pigeonhole application. So we encourage people to participate. We have a banner on our website that I believe has to be updated, but it is on our website. But you can register for these remote locations. There'll be a viewing party, for example, I saw someone's just doing one at the Dubliner on University Avenue. Another group is working on maybe doing one at a hall at the University of Minnesota. And so over the next 10 days, you're going to see these satellite locations pop up. We've got several groups in rural Minnesota who are working on doing satellite sites. And so we encourage people to participate because this will be the one venue where we actually have conservation, environment, energy questions before these candidates.
Yeah, we've these six candidates have met to talk about other issues, but it's really great when we're focused on one, because otherwise we get the standard soundbite and we don't get much more depth. I guarantee that you'll be digging in deeper on these issues. So again, that is 6:30 Wednesday, January 24th at the Drew Fine Arts Center at Hamline University in St. Paul. Go over to mepartnership.org. You can click on the banner there to get more information, and it should be a great time. I'm looking forward to seeing the live stream.
Absolutely. And if you go to our website and on the upper banner, click on the upper banner, it'll take you, there's a banner across the top, it'll take you to more information about the site and how to register for all the various sites.
Okay. Steve Morris with the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Always a good conversation.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about the mythical aircraft that we're selling. Yeah, Donald Trump is getting things mixed up. Kind of a theme here today. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Six unique, fun, exciting, winning destinations located throughout central Wisconsin. Make your rounds to Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, or Wisconsin Dells for the hottest slots, most exciting games, award-winning guest service, delicious food and spirits, lodging, and live entertainment. Join the Ho-Chunk Gaming Rewards Club for free. And with a single card, you can earn valuable points no matter which of the six locations you choose to play. That means more exclusive offers, giveaways, cash back, discounts, and much more. Visit us online to see all we have to offer and find the fun times nearest you at HoChunkGaming.com. So wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, and Wisconsin Dells.
Experience the difference. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin.
Must be 21 or over to play.
What do we do with the cars and trucks that are donated to Auto Technical? We help families with transportation. Sometimes they break down in tears, they're so relieved. Kids jumping around saying, oh, now we can go see Grandma. Do something great. Donate that car or truck to Auto Technical. Call me.
Call Auto Technical at 612-919-5526 or online at autotechnical.org.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
Hey, welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. Earlier in the program, we talked about President Donald Trump seemingly being contradictory when he was issuing tweets this morning. And then we talked about how Donald Trump was calling people from certain countries blank hole countries. You have to fill in the blank because I can't say it on the air here, saying, oh, we should have more people from Norway. I guess because they're white as opposed to the countries that he was not in favor of. And Norway seems to be something he's very popular, very happy about talking about here, because he just had a session with the Norwegian Prime Minister Erna Solberg at the White House on Wednesday. And he caused really quite a stir with his announcement that the United States had delivered F-52 fighter jets to Norway. There's a problem with that, because F-52 fighter jets are not a secret advanced jet of capable of beating Russian counterparts. It's not a ruse to fool intelligent analysts. Neither, it turns out, the F-52 is a fictional jet only available to fly if you're a gamer at the controls of Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. Trump lauded the sale of the fictional planes alongside Solberg at the White House on Wednesday. Don't believe me? Listen.
In November, we started delivering the first F-52s and F-35 fighter jets. We have a total of 52, and they've delivered a number of them already, a little ahead of schedule.
Yeah. Trump was reading from a statement, believe it or not, and it appears he combined the figure 52 planes with the F designation assigned to fighter jets in the U.S. inventory, such as the F-35 Lightning II. Lockheed Martin, the defense company that produces the actual aircraft, said in a statement that the Norwegian government has so far authorized funding for 40 F-35s, has taken delivery of 10 to date. No F-52s. They'll just have to send them some, games. I don't even know what game that is. What game system that gets played on, but Call of Duty, Advanced Warfare. Maybe we'll be sending them a whole bunch of them. Okay, that is it for today's show. A reminder, the Uptake, which I am the executive director for now these days, is still needing your help. The legislature, the new session is coming here in February, and we are gearing up to cover all of what's going on better than we ever have before, and we need your help. Go over to theuptake.org, click on the donate button, and you too can help transparency at the Minnesota Capitol and cover not just what's happening there, but all of the political contests that are coming up. I'm Mike McEntee. I'll be back with you tomorrow.